Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sunsounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster, and this episode on Thursday, January 30th, 2025, will feature articles that appeared in the Arizona Mirror over the past week. Since this program airs only once a week, some of the articles may be a bit dated, and breaking stories may be added toward the end. The Arizona Mirror is an independent publication which sources stories from all over the state and the nation. We will focus primarily on stories that impact people in Arizona. In this week's episode, these are some of the stories we'll be reading. Republican lawmakers ignore legal warnings to push forward with restrictions on trans people, flags. Arizona is suing to block Trump's federal spending freeze. This is where we came from. Tribe battles uranium transport through ancestral lands. Navajo people push for RECA reauthorization. U.S. senators reintroduce bill. And let's get started. Our first story, Republican lawmakers ignore legal warnings to push forward with restrictions on trans people, flags. By Gloria Rebecca Gomez, January 28, 2025. Republican lawmakers are aiming to erase trans Arizonans from public life and ban government agencies from displaying LGBTQ pride flags, ignoring warnings from legislative attorneys that doing so could potentially violate the U.S. Constitution. On Monday, a panel of five Republican state representatives and three Democrats voted along party lines to declare two bills that continue the GOP's recent trend of advancing discriminatory legislation are constitutional and fit for consideration by the full House of Representatives. Across the country, Republican attacks on LGBTQ people, particularly trans Americans, have escalated, each year breaking the last year's record since 2021. And with President Donald Trump in office, GOP lawmakers are more eager than ever to target LGBTQ Americans. In Arizona, that hostility manifests in proposals that seek to greenlight discrimination against trans people in public spaces and block state agencies from expressing support for the LGBTQ community. House Bill 2062 would enshrine a narrow definition of biological sex into state law based on a person's reproductive characteristics and allow schools and other state agencies to bar trans people from using the bathrooms or locker rooms that best align with their gender identity. Trans Arizonans would also be prevented from joining athletic teams or living in domestic violence shelters that reflect who they are. House Bill 2113, meanwhile, would forbid the flying of any flag on a government building that isn't an Arizona state flag, an Arizona Indian Nations flag, a first responder flag, any version of the American flag, or a Blue Star or Gold Star service flag. House Rules Attorney Tim Fleming told lawmakers that both bills have the potential to embroil the state in legal challenges. The proposal advocating for a limited application of biological sex could lead to lawsuits from transgender Arizonans who experience discrimination as a result of state agencies that use the law to develop restrictive public facilities policies. Policies that separate biological men from women could cause an issue with transgender persons who seek to use restroom facilities that match their gender identity, Fleming said. While he acknowledged that the legal landscape around transgender rights remains, quote, unsettled, he pointed out that, for now, federal law and the U.S. Constitution shield Americans from gender-based discrimination. The 14th Amendment guarantees all Americans enjoy equal treatment under the law, while Title IX, which prohibits sex-based discrimination at any federally funded school, and Title VII, which covers employees' civil rights, have long been interpreted as including gender identity in their protections. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, under whose jurisdiction Arizona lies, temporarily blocked an Idaho law forcing trans students to use school facilities consistent with their biological sex while it considers the case's constitutional implications. In the end, Fleming said, a clearer legal picture will likely emerge in the next few years. We probably should talk more about these kinds of things in 3 or 4 years, and then we'll know what the full state of the law is as it settles down, he said. Fleming also warned lawmakers that the bid to strictly limit which kind of flag state buildings can display is in danger of violating the free speech protections that even government employees have. What's unclear from the bill as it was originally presented was whether there might be some overbroad application that might cut off a government actor's ability to fully express private thoughts, he said. Opponents of the proposal have pointed out that it's likely to jeopardize the ability of Arizonans to show off allegiance to their favorite sports teams, or foreign language teachers to display the flag of the country whose language students are studying. Democrats have accused Republican lawmakers of attempting to censure Governor Katie Hobbs for her move to fly the LGBTQ pride flag from the 9th floor for the first time in the state's history. To remedy some of the bill's issues, Fleming said he and its sponsor have worked on an amendment that will exempt, quote, approved educational curricula and the right of Arizonans to express, quote, civil and political liberties. While the bills are likely to earn the approval of the Republican majority legislature, they almost certainly headed toward Hobbs' veto stamp. The Democrat has repeatedly vowed to reject any proposal that seek to curtail the rights of LGBTQ Arizonans, and a near identical copy of the bill seeking to enshrine a limited understanding of biological sex into state law has already been vetoed by the governor last year. And that concludes this first story. Republican lawmakers ignore legal warnings to push forward with restrictions on trans people flags. Our second story, Arizona is suing to block Trump's federal spending freeze. A litany of federally funded programs for Arizonans are affected, including Medicaid health care coverage. By Caitlin Sievers, January 28, 2025. Arizona is joining with other states to sue President Donald Trump over his sweeping federal grant freeze that is set to go into effect Tuesday evening, according to the Attorney General's office. State and local government leaders, as well as those who run or rely on federally funded programs, were scrambling on Tuesday to find out exactly how the payment freeze would impact them. One program directly affected is Medicaid, which provides health care for about 2 million Arizonans. As of 12:40 p.m. Tuesday, the state did not have access to the Medicaid payment system, said Christian Slater, a spokesman for Governor Katie Hobbs. White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt posted on social media Tuesday afternoon, in response to the uproar about the Medicaid program outage, that no payments had been impacted and that the portal was supposed to be back online soon. Several Medicaid programs are listed by Trump's Office of Management and Budget as temporarily paused while his administration decides whether to continue them. The Grand Canyon state will join New York, California, Illinois, and other states in a lawsuit to block the spending freeze. Richie Taylor, a spokesman for Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays, told the Arizona Mirror. The legal challenge is expected to be filed in the Southern District of New York. Children could miss out on school lunches, victims of crime could lose critical assistance, and law enforcement agencies could be defunded across the country if it stands, Mays wrote in a statement on social media Tuesday. This is a blatant violation of federal law, and we will not allow it to stand. the impact of the payment freeze could be monumental, according to figures from the Pew Charitable Trusts. The federal government gave $1 trillion in grants to states in fiscal year 2022, the most recent year U.S. Census grant data is available. That was a record high, representing 36.4% of states' total revenue. Rebecca Thies, manager at the Pew Charitable Trust, said in a statement, "Federal grant funding helps states pay for public services such as healthcare, education, transportation, and infrastructure. States are currently facing tighter budgets than in recent years due to the expiration of federal pandemic aid and stagnating tax collections, among other challenges. Some of the programs that are set to be paused temporarily while Trump's Office of Management and Budget reviews which federal spending it deems appropriate include Department of Agriculture's Tribal Food Sovereignty Program, Department of Health and Human Services Urban Indian Health Services, Medicare Prescription Drug Coverage, Health and Human Services Teenage Pregnancy Prevention Program, Cancer Treatment Research, Funding for Cardiovascular, Lung, and Blood Disease Research, National Bioterrorism Hospital Preparedness Program, Elder Abuse Prevention Intervention Program, Crop Insurance, Head Start, a program that helps prepare young children from low-income families for school, Pell Grants, which help low-income students pay for college, Special Education Grants, School Safety Grants, Rural Education Assistance, Support for programs that help students with intellectual disabilities transition to adult life, Department of Energy Nuclear Nonproliferation Research, Veterans Affairs Department Suicide Prevention and Legal Services Grants, Low-Income Home Energy Assistance, numerous sexual assault prevention programs within the U.S. Department of Justice. We are still evaluating the full impacts of this reckless action, but one thing is clear. This is creating chaos for veterans, law enforcement, domestic violence shelters, and the children of working families, Governor Katie Hobbs posted on social media. I will not stand by while everyday people in my state are harmed. The city of Phoenix alone relies on $3.255 billion in federal grants, according to Mayor Kate Gallego, with more than $1.6 billion of that still outstanding. Phoenix police and fire departments could lose more than $35 million, and Sky Harbor Airport is still waiting for around $130 million of $152 million in federal grants it was awarded for infrastructure updates. This type of reckless, unconstitutional action will undoubtedly harm millions of families and make it even harder, if not impossible, for local governments to serve their constituents, Gallego said in a statement. Chaos and confusion when running a government has real consequences, and I strongly urge the president to reverse this course and reinstate the flow of federal funding. And that concludes this story. Arizona is suing to block Trump's federal spending freeze. Next, we move on to Indigenous Affairs. This is where we came from. Tribe battles uranium transport through ancestral lands. Havasupai leaders say covered trucks and warning placards aren't enough to protect sacred sites. By Shondeen Silversmith, Tuesday, January 28, 2025. Diana Sue Ukwala always wears traditional moccasins and regalia when she visits Red Butte Mountain. The mountain is sacred to the Havasupai people, and wearing her traditional attire is how she connects with her ancestral homeland near the Grand Canyon and shows it respect. Ukwala said the Havasupai people once lived around Red Butte Mountain because it had everything they needed to survive, including medicinal plants, wild game, and plenty of wood. You can still see the fire pits along the tree line, she said. As a traditional practitioner for her tribe, Eucalla said that when she looks at Red Butte Mountain, she sees the medicine that has sustained her people since time immemorial. While non-native people may see it just a mountain with shrubs and trees, the Havasupai people see it as a holy place where their medicine people came from. "These are going to die," Eucalla said of the vegetation there, because 3 miles north of Red Butte Mountain sits Pinyon Plain Mine, where uranium ore has been extracted since the beginning of 2024 and is approved for transportation along a route that passes by the mountain. Energy Fuels, Inc. owns and operates the Pinyon Plain Uranium Mine on U.S. Forest Service land in the Kaibab National Forest near the Grand Canyon. Numerous tribes, including the Navajo Nation, the Hopi Tribe, and the Havasupai Tribe, have ancestral lands there. The Havasupai Tribe, which lives at the bottom of the Grand Canyon, has repeatedly and emphatically said that the mine poses risks to its drinking water, natural wonders, and sacred cultural sites. Eucalla said that many people from the Havasupai Tribe used to come to Red Butte Mountain to pray. However, with the mine now extracting uranium ore, the fear of contamination is high, so only some still do. "It's a blessing for the land," she said, of the community's tradition of coming together to collect medicine, dance, and pray. Now, it's rare for the tribe to have large gathering at Red Butte Mountain, though Eucalla still visits the mountain when she gets the chance. She said it was heartbreaking when the Havasupai people learned that the mine was now extracting uranium ore, and when the company sent out its first haul trucks in July without any notice to the tribes or communities along the route. "Uranium ore from Pinyon Plain Mine near the Grand Canyon will be transported by over-the-road 24-ton haul trucks and end dump trailers, according to Energy Fuels, Inc., and up to 10 trucks will make the trip daily." Pinyon Plain Mine is at the end of Forest Service Road 305 AB, about 6 miles from the main highway. Driving along the narrow dirt roads, there are no indications that it is the starting point of a uranium haul route. The only identifiers along the narrow gravel roads are flexible orange roadside markers staked into the ground every other mile. Eucalla said the markers are insufficient, giving that she only noticed them once the Arizona Mirror pointed them out to her. The trucks hauling ore from Pinyon Plain Mine travel along the gravel road through the dense trees of the Kaibab Forest before reaching the main highway, State Route 64. The trucks pass Red Butte Mountain, where the main road sits about half a mile from the open area at the mountain's base. The Havasupai tribe condemned Energy Fuels' actions in July when it started transporting uranium ore. Eucalla said that many of her people did not like that the transport happened by surprise, even though the company had promised the Havasupai tribe 5 days' notice. Eucalla thought it was in poor taste that the mining company sent the trucks out early in the morning, a time when many people would not notice them. "That was not right," she added. As part of the mining company's transportation policy, trailers hauling uranium ore must be kept closed at all times, both when containing uranium ore and when empty. That is done using a tarp, which can be removed only when loading and unloading, so there may not be any leakage of radioactive material from the trailer. When Eucalla learned that only a tarp would cover the uranium ore as it was being transported, she said that that was not enough to prevent contamination. She said that if the tarp is not secure, it will start flapping, allowing more air to pass through the truck trailers and potentially releasing contaminants along the roadway. "If they don't maintain those things, a lot of contamination is going to be spread from here all the way up to Utah," Eucalla added. The roughly 320-mile route starts from a Forest Service road before entering State Road 64, It then travels south toward Interstate 40 to enter Flagstaff, proceeding east to head north on U.S. Highway 89 until heading east on U.S. Highway 160. The final stretch sees the trucks take U.S. Highway 191 north into Utah. All shipments of uranium ore from the Pinyon Plain Mine to the White Mesa Mill must be transported without unnecessary delay, according to the mining company's transportation policy. However, in the event of a delay, they have designated safe havens for the, quote, temporary storage of transportation vehicles along the route. Many communities along the haul route, which passes through towns in Arizona, the Hopi Nation, the Navajo Nation, Utah, and the Ute Mountain Ute Tribe, oppose uranium hauling and condemn the first haul in July, citing fears of contamination and accidents along the route. Yukwala said the route raises concerns because State Route 64 attracts heavy traffic in both directions as people head north to the Grand Canyon or south toward Williams and Interstate 40. "You have wrecks all the time," Yukwala said, noting that speeding and poor weather are regular factors for many accidents along the highway. "If one of those big trucks crashes, all that ore is going to come out," she said. "And then what?" She said even if the mining company has an emergency plan in place and is going to clean up, the contamination has already happened and can't be taken back. The trucks hauling uranium ore are almost impossible to distinguish from other tractor trailers that routinely travel the state's highways and interstates. The uranium ore produced by the mine is classified as LSA-1, low specific activity, which means that trucks are not required to label their shipments with more than a yellow placard that reads radioactive in 3-inch letters, according to their transportation policy. The placard must be placed on each side and each end of the truckload, the policy states, and it must be clearly visible from the direction it faces. Dinoline Casca, a member of the Havasupai tribe, said she believes that if the mining company has nothing to hide, it should clearly mark its trucks with signs indicating uranium ore so people can easily identify it and know to stay away. "Don't try to be discreet," she said, adding that she believes the mine knows that many people are against it, so they don't want to advertise it because they're probably going to get more opposition. "Why are you hiding it?" Casca asked. "You're hiding it because you know uranium is cancerous." Decades of opposition span generations of tribal leaders. Yukwala said her tribe's elders have been resisting the uranium mine's efforts for generations. She has been part of that resistance since she was 14, and she is now 65. "We've been fighting it so long," Yukwala said. She recalls how she helped the elders in her community as an apprentice and assisted them during meetings about the mine. "Now I have become the elder that is fighting for this," she added. The Havasupai tribe's land is over 188,000 acres of canyon land and broken plateaus bordering the western edge of the Grand Canyon South Rim. Supai, their main village, is located 8 miles below the rim of the Grand Canyon. According to the Center for Biological Diversity, the mine has a history of flooding. It drains into shallow groundwater aquifers that flow into South Rim Springs. The mine also threatens to contaminate deep aquifers that feed Havasu Creek and other Grand Canyon springs. The Havasupai tribe, several conservation groups, and other tribal nations have opposed the mine for years. The Havasupai tribe was involved in a lengthy legal battle that sought to close the mine, but a federal judge ruled in the mine's favor in 2020. But that hasn't stopped the Havasupai from trying to halt the mine's operations. Their latest effort involves calling for a new environmental impact statement and writing a letter of opposition to the Arizona Department of Environmental Quality, which issued the mine an Aquifer Protection Plan permit in 2022. The Havasupai tribe was also one of many that advocated for the designation Baja Nuaha Lata Kukveni, the ancestral footprints of the Grand Canyon National Monument, which effectively bars mining on roughly 1 million acres of land near the Grand Canyon, including the land for Pinyon Plain Mine and Red Butte Mountain. However, according to the U.S. Forest Service, Pinyon Plain Mine is exempted because of its previous existing rights. This is part of our history, Kaska said, of the land surrounding Red Butte Mountain. All this land around here, that's us. Kaska is part of the Havasupai Tribes Council Uranium Subcommittee. She advocates alongside her community to educate people about what is happening and stop uranium mining and transportation within their ancestral homelands. Kaska said she grew up wandering around Red Butte Mountain, where she would go hunting and gather medicine with her family. She said she hopes that the work the Havasupai tribe is doing to protect the mountain will save it for the next generation. We're trying to make sure that we protect our land, she added. This is where we came from. Kaska said she wants the next generation of Havasupai people to be able to come out to the mountain and participate in the Havasupai's way of life, including hunting, gathering, and other cultural customs. It's our culture that we need to protect, she added. When she heard Pinyon Plain Mine started sending trucks along the route, hauling uranium ore, Kaska said she was devastated and scared. She said hauling the uranium ore across the Havasupai's ancestral homelands and near their traditional cultural property is putting the tribe's health and people in jeopardy. We are in jeopardy, whether these people see it or not, she said. Kaska said their community has been fighting against the mine for a long time, and she wants people to understand that, quote, uranium kills. Having the mine continue operating and transporting ore will only end in, quote, disaster. It's not just my people. Everybody has to speak up, Ukwala said. Uranium doesn't kill you right away. It makes you suffer. Uranium ore hauling from Pinyon Plain Mine is currently on hold as negotiations continue between the Navajo Nation government and Energy Fuels. In addition to negotiations, other requests have been made, including calls from the Havasupai tribe, Arizona Attorney General Chris Mays, and Governor Katie Hobbs, for the U.S. Forest Service to conduct a new environmental impact study for the Pinyon Plain Mine. Kaska said that when the mining company halted the transportation of the uranium ore in August after calls from their tribe, the Navajo Nation and Hobbs, it gave her some hope. I guess we do have people on our side, she said, adding that it fuels their hope that the tribe will prevail. It's going to be a hard fight. However, Kaska expressed concerns about the mining company's voluntary transportation halt and ongoing negotiations with the Navajo Nation. Kaska said the mining company is only talking to the Navajo Nation, and the Havasupai tribe should be included in the negotiation because the hauling route starts in their ancestral homeland. We should have a part in that negotiation because they are using our ancestral lands to get it out of here, Kaska said. They're coming out of our territory, so we should have some say, but we're left out. That concludes this story. This is where we came from. Tribe battles uranium transport through ancestral lands. You're listening to the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. Our next story, Navajo people push for RECA reauthorization. U.S. senators reintroduce bill. Another story by Sean Dean Silversmith, January 27, 2025. Holding signs that read Honor the Treaty of 1868, reauthorize RECA, funding for healthcare, and Speaker Johnson, pass RECA before we die, a group of Diné people marched to the Navajo Nation Council chambers in Window Rock on Monday to commemorate the National Day of Remembrance for Downwinders and to urge their tribal leaders to push the U.S. Congress to reauthorize the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act. The Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, or RECA, provides a program that compensates individuals who become ill because of exposure to radiation from the United States' development and testing of nuclear weapons. But because of congressional inaction, the program expired last summer. That means no new claims can be filed, and only claims postmarked before June 10, 2024 will be considered. We're still fighting for RECA up in Washington, Kathleen Tsotsi said in an Instagram Live video of the group's march. Tsotsi's grandfather, father, and uncles all worked as uranium miners on the Navajo Nation near Cove, Arizona, from the 1940s to the 1960s. From 1944 to 1986, nearly 30 million tons of uranium ore were extracted from Navajo lands, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and hundreds of Navajo people worked in the mines, often living and raising families in close proximity to the mines and mills. Tsotsi is also a two-time cancer survivor, has advocated for RECA for decades, and serves on the Navajo Uranium Radiation Victims Committee. In front of the Navajo Nation Council chambers, Tsotsi discussed the importance of working with the Republican-held U.S. House and Senate to pass RECA. "We don't know what lies ahead," she said, adding their most recent efforts included sending several groups to Washington, D.C. in September to advocate for the reauthorization of RECA. One of those groups included the Sawmill Dene Warriors, a group of Navajo people mainly from the small community located approximately 20 miles north of Window Rock, Arizona. Maggie Billyman, a founder of Sawmill Dene Warriors, spoke in front of the Navajo Nation Council chambers on Monday, calling for continued support for RECA and families across the country. She said she fights for justice for RECA on behalf of her children and will continue to fight for her tribe and others throughout the country until the act passes. "The White House needs to know we're human as much as they are," Billyman added. A bipartisan group of senators hopes to restart RECA after last year's legislation failed to pass the U.S. House of Representatives. U.S. Senators Mark Kelly, Democrat from Arizona, Josh Hawley, a Republican from Missouri, Martin Heinrich, a Democrat from New Mexico, Ben Ray Lujan, a Democrat from New Mexico, and Eric Schmidt, a Republican from Missouri, have reintroduced the bill to compensate people who are exposed to radiation by government weapons programs. Between the 1940s and the 1990s, thousands of uranium mines operated in the United States, according to the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. Most operated in Colorado, Utah, Wyoming, New Mexico, and Arizona, typically on federal and tribal lands. The number of mining locations associated with uranium is around 15,000, according to the EPA, and of those, more than 4,000 have documented uranium production. For decades, Arizonans living near uranium mining sites and nuclear testing zones have been exposed to dangerous levels of radiation, causing people to suffer from serious health conditions, Kelly said in a press release. "We owe it to them and to all those impacted across the country to right this wrong and get them the support they deserve." The RECA expansion bill would include more communities downwind of nuclear test sites in the United States and Guam. It would extend eligibility for uranium workers, including those who worked after 1971. Communities harmed by radioactive waste from the tests could apply for the program, and expansion would also boost compensation payments to account for inflation. "The time to reauthorize RECA is now," Hawley said in a press release. "For far too long, Missourians and others across America have suffered without compensation from their government," he added. "It is vital that we unite to pass this legislation now and that the president sign it into law." From 1945 to 1992, the U.S. conducted a total of 1,030 nuclear tests, according to the Arms Control Association. Many were conducted at the Nevada test site, with 928 nuclear tests conducted at the site between 1951 and 1992, according to the Nevada National Security Site. About 100 were atmospheric tests, and the rest were underground detonations. According to the United Nations Scientific Committee on the Effects of Atomic Radiation, atmospheric tests involved unrestrained releases of radioactive materials directly into the environment, causing the largest collective dose of radiation from human-made sources thus far. In New Mexico and across the country, thousands sacrificed to contribute to our nation's security, Lujan said in a press release, adding that many of the individuals impacted by nuclear weapons testing, downwind radiation exposure, and uranium mining are still waiting for justice. It is unacceptable that so many who have gotten sick from radiation exposure have been denied compensation by Congress, he added, saying that RECA is a bipartisan priority. He expressed hope that the legislation will clear the U.S. Senate again. During the RECA Advocates March to the Navajo Nation Capitol on Monday, Navajo Nation Council Delegate Amber Kanazba Crotty said the Navajo Nation has to continuously remind their congressional and federal leaders in charge of making decisions regarding compensation that their people and communities have suffered at the hands of radioactive material for generations. The federal government knew how that material would impact the lives of our fathers, grandfathers, and great-grandfathers, she said, and it continues to impact the lives of their children and grandchildren. Crotty said uranium left a legacy of contamination, pain, and health disparities throughout the Navajo Nation, and it is time for Congress and the federal government to fully compensate those who have been impacted. The time is now, she added, noting that this is a bipartisan issue and should be supported by both parties. The United States needs to restore what they have taken from our communities, Crotty said, and one of those first steps is expanding and fully funding RECA. And with that, we conclude this story. Navajo people push for RECA reauthorization. U.S. senators reintroduce bill. Our next story, Hobbs names Maria Elena Cruz the first Latina justice to Arizona Supreme Court, by Caitlin Sievers, January 29, 2025. Governor Katie Hobbs on Wednesday named Judge Maria Elena Cruz to the Arizona Supreme Court, making her the first Latina and first Black High Court justice in state history. Why should the courts not reflect the population? Cruz told reporters on Wednesday. Cruz is a Yuma County Democrat who has been a judge in Arizona since 2005, first as a Superior Court judge in Yuma, and, since 2017, on the Arizona Court of Appeals. Cruz's bid for the High Court garnered bipartisan support, including the unanimous backing of the Judicial Screening Panel that recommended 5 applicants to Hobbs. Cruz said that she has avoided politics most of her life and believes that she has support from both sides of the aisle because they've seen the work she's done in their communities. I think it's just an expression of people's confidence in the work that I have done, she said. Hobbs is the first Democrat in more than 15 years to appoint a justice to the state Supreme Court, choosing Cruz to replace Republican Robert Brutinel, who retired at the end of October after 14 years on the high court. 5 of the current justices, James Bean, Clint Bolick, Catherine King, John Lopez IV, and Bill Montgomery, were appointed by former Governor Doug Ducey, who oversaw an expansion of the court by 2 seats, while Chief Justice Ann Timmer was appointed by former Governor Jan Brewer. During a press briefing to announce the appointment, Cruz told reporters that she brought with her to the state's high court 20 years of experience as a judge, including service in Superior Court, the Court of Appeals, and in Kokopah Tribal Court. Once a month, she still presides over the restitution court she started in Yuma, which ensures perpetrators of crimes pay the restitution ordered by the court to their victims. Cruz pledged her loyalty to the rule of law and said she also brings to the court the perspective of someone who grew up, lived, and raised a family in rural Arizona, as well as someone who understands the challenges of those marginalized because of their race or gender. I will do the work of applying the law fairly, but I will also do it while acknowledging that access to justice is limited, and there is much work to be done in ensuring that poverty or lack of education do not continue to be barriers for Arizonans in understanding the legal system, Cruz said. Hobbs praised Cruz's background of hard work and dedication to serving the people of Arizona with expertise and professionalism, as well as her mentorship of aspiring lawyers. Judge Cruz, the attorney and judicial officer, is eminently qualified to serve on our state's highest court, but Judge Cruz, the person, gives me confidence that she will be a justice who gives a voice to working-class people in every corner of our state, Hobbs said. Cruz moved to Arizona from Puerto Rico with her parents. Her father is Puerto Rican, and her mother is from the Dominican Republic, when she was 14 years old. She didn't speak any English when she arrived, but went on to earn a law degree from the University of Arizona and has lived in Yuma for more than 30 years. I'm humbled that you have placed your confidence and trust in me to carry out this important role for the people of our state, Cruz said. Timmer, a Republican, lauded Cruz's adventurous spirit as well as her, quote, academic heft and analytical ability as a judge. The Chief Justice added that Cruz also brings to the court a rural perspective on the Arizona Supreme Court's oversight of lower courts and regulation of the practice of law. It is extraordinarily important to the court that everyone has equal access to justice and is able to accommodate the procedures and policies of the court, Timmer said. So, having someone from Yuma and a former Superior Court judge is a tremendous boon to our court. Cruz was surrounded by family, including her in-laws, her parents, her husband, and adult children, as Hobbs introduced her as the next Arizona Supreme Court Justice. Cruz acknowledged the political reality of judicial appointments made by elected officials, but said that it was freeing as a judge not to be obligated to a particular outcome, like she was as a litigator. A true and honest judge and justice is going to look at the law openly, fairly, and give it a read that is faithful to its meaning. And that's what I hope to be able to do, Cruz said. That concludes this story. Hobbs names Maria Elena Cruz the first Latina justice to Arizona Supreme Court. Next up, chemtrail believers sway GOP lawmakers to support geoengineering ban. House committee passes bill that would outlaw cloud seeding and climate intervention research after supporters cite debunked conspiracy theories. By Jared McDonald Evoy, January 28, 2025. Conspiracy theorists came out in force Tuesday afternoon to support a Republican bill that aims to ban, quote, geoengineering, citing the long-debunked chemtrails conspiracy theory as evidence that nefarious actors are already turning Arizona skies into a laboratory and treating its unsuspecting residents as guinea pigs. This started when I noticed lines in the sky that did not look normal, Jody Brackett told the House Regulatory Oversight Committee. As Brackett stood at the podium in the legislative hearing room, a man held a collage of photos of contrails taken in Arizona. Brackett said she brought the issue to freshman GOP legislator Lisa Fink's attention. Claims that Arizona has seen an increase in contrails left behind by airliners was a major theme among many of the speakers who came to support the bill. Whether you know it or not, Your body is part of their laboratory, Crystal Hansen told the committee, claiming that the vapor trails left behind by airliners are not condensation, citing a website that has posted altered photos and videos as evidence of the conspiracy. The geography of the Phoenix metropolitan area, where many of those who spoke in favor of Fink's House Bill 2056 said they reside, plays a role in those long-hanging contrails that many see as, quote, proof of a larger conspiracy. The region sits basically in a bowl surrounded by mountains, with an inversion above the bowl that traps the air below it. That results in high ozone and other pollutant levels, as well as contrails that linger in the air longer than they do in most other places. We the people are extremely concerned with all the trails in our skies, Melissa Price said to the committee, adding that she wants lawmakers to send the bill to the ballot for voters to decide on. But Price did not concede that even with all the weather modification she claimed was happening, the state is not seeing any rain and remains facing the effects of a historic drought. Fink's bill would ban geoengineering in Arizona. In simple terms, geoengineering is the practice of intentionally attempting to modify the atmosphere. In recent years, it has been explored as a possible way to combat the increasingly extreme effects of climate change. The field is largely theoretical, with only small projects taking place, some of which have faced backlash from local communities. Geoengineering has recently become the focus of groups that have previously pushed unfounded conspiracy theories about vaccines. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration currently monitors the planet's atmosphere for signs of geoengineering programs by other nations or by small venture capitalist-backed groups. The emerging field has caused fierce debate among scientists, some of whom see it as a way to combat mankind's impact on the planet, while others see it as another way to create climate chaos. Many refer to the practice as climate intervention, and some scientists have been studying it as a means of combating climate change. These efforts have included studying things like solar radiation modification, a process that aims to decrease surface temperatures by reflecting sunlight away from the planet. Last year, Tennessee lawmakers passed a law that banned geoengineering, with lawmakers during the debate alluding to the debunked chemtrails conspiracy theory. Online conspiracy theorists have long pointed to the condensation left behind by airliners as being part of a larger conspiracy to modify the weather or poison the populace, though no evidence of such programs exist, and the contrails planes sometimes leave behind are little more than water vapor that has frozen into ice crystals. Other speakers also saw the bill as a way to combat other bogus geoengineering conspiracy theories that have long had a place in the fringes of conspiracy culture. Leslie Forster told the committee that the bill would help protect Arizonans from the High Frequency Active Oral Research Program, also known as AHAARP, which studies the planet's upper atmosphere. The research project has been accused of causing a litany of weather-related events despite its inability to impact the weather. Speakers also confused sulfur iodide with sodium iodide, a chemical commonly used in cloud seeding. Cloud seeding eventually became a focus of the committee as Fareed Bailey, a lobbyist representing the Salt River Project, said the utility was concerned about the bill's ban on it. Fink's HB 2056 bill would ban a litany of geoengineering practices, including cloud seeding, deploying aerosol particles in the stratosphere, releasing chaff into the atmosphere, solar radiation modification, or any other attempts to modify the weather. Her legislation is similar to several others filed in other states this year. Bailey said SRP has been studying cloud seeding as a possible way to help with the state's water woes, but all research has been theoretical in computer models, SRP has not flown any aircraft to conduct cloud seeding tests, Bailey said. We do not want to close the door to this promising technology, he said, adding that silver iodide, the main chemical used in cloud seeding, has been found to be largely non-toxic. Bailey's claim was met with boos and jeers from many in the audience. The bill initially was written to bar any government agency, research project, university, public or private organization, or military force from engaging in geoengineering, with violators facing a $500,000 fine and a felony with up to 3 years of prison. The director of the Department of Water Resources would have been tasked with investigating any claim of geoengineering. But the GOP-led committee amended the proposal to remove those penalties, and the responsibility of the head of the water agency instead allowed citizens to bring any geoengineering claims to court, where they'd be awarded injunctive relief if they prove their case. The amendment also adds a ban on universities funding any research into solar radiation modification. One attendee felt the amendment lacked, quote, teeth, and suggested that the punishment for geoengineering be treason, which is punishable by death, eliciting cheers from the attendees. Others asked members of the committee to, quote, get on Instagram to see the evidence of geoengineering that is allegedly happening out of Sky Harbor International Airport. Many cited increased issues with asthma as proof of the geoengineering plot. With the increase in population and heat, the Phoenix metro area has seen a marked increase in the number of high pollution days, which leads to more adverse reactions to those with asthma and other breathing complications. Some in attendance also appeared to believe in other conspiracy theories, sporting T-shirts supporting election reforms based on election fraud falsities, and sharing with the committee their belief that a large number of children are being sex trafficked, a core component of the QAnon conspiracy theory. Local election conspiracy theorist Gail Golick also came out to support the bill Tuesday afternoon. The formal GOP platform makes no mention of climate change, greenhouse gases, the environment, pollution, clean air, or clean water. It makes a brief mention of conservation in a section on restoring American beauty. And although there is broad scientific consensus that human activity is causing climate change and that its effects are becoming more extreme, Arizona Republicans largely reject that it is happening at all. Last year, state Senate Republicans backed a bill to bar state government and universities from spending money to reduce greenhouse gases or research climate change, deeming them both, quote, Marxist ideas that are, quote, anti-God. Democratic committee members voiced concern that they did not hear from any experts, such as physicians or scientists. When the minority lawmakers said they didn't see any evidence of what the bill's proponents were saying, many in attendance booed, leading Republican committee chair Joseph Chaplick to threaten bringing in security if outbursts continued. Representative Rachel Keschel, a Republican from Tucson, who is married to conspiracy theorist Seth Keschel, said she has seen, quote, adequate research that the alleged chemicals involved in the fictional geoengineering leads to increased Alzheimer's. And Chaplick said his ability to see individual airplanes flying more than 20,000 feet above Phoenix that are leaving contrails in the sky was concerning enough to support changing Arizona law to ban geoengineering. You're seeing these in the sky at nighttime or early morning. You're really not seeing the planes fully flying around in the air, he said, adding that he has been talking with Fink about the issue for a few months. The bill passed out of committee along party lines, with Republicans voting in favor and Democrats opposing. The bill heads next to the full House of Representatives for consideration. And that concludes this story. Chemtrail believers sway GOP lawmakers to support geoengineering ban. In the short time we have left, we'll give you an abbreviated version of the next story. Republicans advance strict online porn age verification bill amid privacy concerns. And that is by Gerald McDonald Evoy, January 29th, 2025. a Republican-backed proposal to require Arizonans to prove they are at least 18 years old before accessing online pornography moved forward Wednesday morning. That verification could be done either by submitting a government-issued ID to the website operator or using an age verification system that relies on private transactional data. The bill, run by freshman Republican lawmaker Nick Cupper, a Republican from Surprise, is similar to legislation Republicans have pushed in previous years that failed to gain support due to constitutional concerns. And that bill passed out of the committee along party lines, with Republicans voting in favor and Democrats opposing. This bill also heads next to the full House of Representatives for consideration. We also have an update from Shaundeen Silversmith on January 29th that the Navajo Nation reaches agreement with mining company over uranium ore transport. We have a settlement agreement that will allow the Navajo Nation to monitor and inspect the haul trucks and that provides financial compensation for the expenses to improve safety and protect the environment. Stephen Etzidi, executive director of the Navajo Nation Environmental Protection Agency, said in a press release. The mining company said it's agreed to some additional protections and accommodations and would follow clear emergency response procedures, abide by notice and reporting requirements, carry additional insurance, and give its drivers extra training and qualifications, including obtaining Navajo Nation transport licenses. It's also going to use a state-of-the-art cover system instead of the tarps it had previously said it would use to prevent uranium ore dust from blowing out of transport trucks. They will also make provisions for escorts and blessings at the discretion of the Navajo Nation, and additional inspection procedures that will enable the Navajo Nation to ensure that all applicable rules and agreements are being satisfied. So it seems like they have come to an agreement, and I'm sure we're going to be hearing more about that in the weeks to come. And with that update, it looks like that's all the time we're going to have for this week's edition of the Arizona Mirror, brought to you each week at this time by Sun Sounds of Arizona. I'm Lauren Vicker, your volunteer broadcaster. If you missed any part of this program or want to hear a story again, you know you can go to our website, sunsounds.org, and click on Demand Podcasts. You also can take Sun Sounds with you by getting our stream and on-demand podcasts on our new Sun Sounds of Arizona app for Apple and Android phones. And you can also hear Sun Sounds on your Echo Dot or smart home device. Thanks so much for joining us this week. Stay tuned for more great programming from Sun Sounds of Arizona, and we'll look forward to seeing you next week.